The destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We do there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Oh my God! He's coming at you!
When it comes to two-year-old Olivia James, you are not the father.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman. What's the ish?
What's up, everybody? How you doing? That's right, my name is James Gutman, and you are tuned in to JG's Radio Free Insanity for March the 10th, 2006. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I missed you all last week. As you guys know, I was recovering from the flu. My voice really wasn't at the point where I wanted to talk for a prolonged period of time. Probably would have been fairly incoherent, which would have been fun for me, not for you. But you picked a great week to come back and join us, because this week we're going to be joined right here in part two by the incomparable, the amazing, the phenomenal AJ Styles. Very excited to have him on, actually. AJ, we've wanted to have him on pretty much since the beginning. It's one of those things where he's one of those names that we constantly try to get. I've always loved watching AJ in the ring and really becoming the franchise of Total Nonstop Action. When you think of TNA, I mean, there's other guys that, you know, kind of pop through your head, and none of them really spring to mind right now. But AJ Styles, actually, above all else, is the guy that a lot of people remember, because he kind of, and we'll go into this when we talk to him on the phone, reminds me a lot of kind of that Rob Van Dam character, that guy who's not in WWE, has never really been in WWE. I mean, when I say Rob Van Dam character, I mean prior to 2001 when he was in ECW. I mean, AJ's done some dark matches, done some small matches, but never really WWE guy. And the kind of performer that you love watching him on the indies, but a part of you knows that if he ever did make his way there, it just wouldn't be the same, and probably wouldn't be used the same way. But unlike Rob, AJ's not in WWE, not being beaten down constantly. We're glad to see him where he is, because kind of get a better chance to see him showcase his skills. So pretty cool. We'll have him on. We'll talk a little bit about what he has going on and Total Nonstop Action. A lot of the new things they have coming up. Exciting time to be a part of that company. Big pay-per-view this weekend. Depending on when you're listening to this, maybe last weekend, whenever it is. But yeah, we'll go into all that with him. Pretty cool. Have a lot of fun on that end. So it should be nice. Other things to talk about, you guys, you know what? If there's something to talk about, let's talk a little bit about WrestleMania 22, I guess we are up to now. It is the big time, as opposed to, you know, the other pay-per-views. Those are just bullshit, small time. This is the big time, people. Big time. So, yeah, that is coming your way the day after April Fool's Day. If you think there's an irony in that, well, that's up to you. You're the ones who are paying $40 to the pay-per-view the day after April Fool's. So put all that together and try to figure it out. Let's run down the card, because it's not good. And there's a couple of reasons why it's not good, and we'll kind of go into that. A lot of people are complaining, saying, you know, well, WrestleMania doesn't really have that Mania feel to it this year. Kind of almost like an afterthought. The matches aren't really anything anyone's been, like, salivating over or anything like that. I mean, there's defenders that WWE has coming to their aid, and in some ways they're right, saying, well, this is the best that WWE could put together. These are the stars that they have right now. They've had a tough year with injuries and other things, so this is what we have. All right, I understand all that. Here's my problems with WrestleMania. Number one, I definitely think that there are other matches that they could have strung together to maybe get a different reaction. I think Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels for the world title would have been a great match to put on there, just simply because the two of them had a great match last year. It wasn't based on the title. Now Angle is the world champion. Put Angle in there with Michaels. I mean, those are just little stupid things, and that's fantasy booking. And a lot of you guys know I don't really like to do the fantasy booking. I don't like to say, well, I would put this guy in there with that guy, because, I mean, there are extenuating circumstances. You never really know what is keeping some of these things apart, what the long-term plans are. So I don't do that. I don't fantasy book. So what I do, when we look at cards that aren't working, let's take a look at what they have laid out right now. All right? The problem isn't the card. I mean, it's not a great card, but the problem really isn't the card. The problem has been the build-up with the card. In my opinion, I've always said this, in professional wrestling, it's about promotion. Okay? So, theoretically, you could have a card of all jobber matches. It's the company's job to promote those matches to the point where people want to see them. And as it stands right now, WWE has a full lineup for WrestleMania, and they're just not, in my opinion, promoting it correctly. Let me give you guys a rundown of what we have to look forward to. And this is all care of the WWE website. First and foremost, we'll start off with the match that everybody's talking about. Just simply because there's so much to talk about. John Cena and Triple H for the world, World Championship, which is always another fun situation with WWE, making sure you don't say World Championship, but it's WWE Championship, even though for 20 years they were kind of synonymous with each other. So you have Triple H and you have John Cena going in there with probably one of the worst build-ups between two people that WWE has put out there for a title match. And the problem with Cena, it's a funny thing with John, because John Cena, I think, at least in my opinion, is a good character, and always has been a good character, but the way he's been scripted, and the way his character has been presented, and the way he's come out there on Monday Night Raw and gotten punked out, he continuously looks like a bitch every week, which is always tough when you have a guy on top of your roster who is theoretically looked at as kind of a bitch by the fans, and that's what Cena's looked at as. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. John Cena's career looks like it's being sabotaged on purpose. And why can we say this? Well, in my opinion, if anybody else would be getting the reactions that John Cena is getting as a top babyface, they wouldn't be a babyface for long. And that's what I never understood about the whole thing. The guy's going out there and he's getting hammered and hammered by the fans and booed and all these things. And WWE is keeping him in the position he's in. Now, you want to spin conspiracy theories and you want to say that, you know, everything's a conspiracy. Well, in my opinion, Triple H is a top heel going into WrestleMania. Okay, now if John Cena were to be turned heel now, Triple H's only option would be to go into WrestleMania as a babyface. And as we all know, Hunter, good guy, doesn't really work as well as Hunter as a bad guy. So John Cena is continuing to drown in his own misery and jeers while the fans just hammer the shit out of him. And, I mean, it's the kind of thing now, we're heading into the biggest show of the year, and the champion on WWE's number one brand, or how they perceive to be their number one brand, is heading in as one of the most unpopular champions in a while. And all you really need to do when it comes to this Triple H John Cena feud is look at our interview from, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now. And we weren't here last week, and this is something I wanted to hammer on the whole time. They came out, and they had this face-to-face, and Hunter bitch-slapped John Cena. Verbally bitch-slapped John Cena. The problem with Triple H and his character, and it's something that's always bothered me about him, is that he's a bad guy. Okay, and when you're a bad guy, you don't have to necessarily show ass, as they say. You don't have to be, you know, oh, I'm so afraid of you all the time, you know, to all the good guys. No, you can be a tough bad guy. Problem with Hunter is he has these witty lines that you could tell he works on. You could tell that he practices in his bus. You could tell that he goes over in his head, which is good, except that they're there to kind of embarrass the baby faces. And in John Cena's case, it's not good to have the bad guy heading in to the pay-per-view with kind of better one-liners than the babyface. One-liners that are actually ring true, which is Hunter's big problem, and I've said this before. There was last year in his feud with Batista, he came out and he said terrible stuff about Randy Orton. This whole thing about Randy Orton is a punk, and he's begging for the scraps of WrestleMania, and he can't cut the mustard, and everything he said about Randy Orton at the time was true. And people were saying, well, Hunter's a bad guy. Hunter says bad things. Yeah, but Hunter is saying truthful things. In this face-to-face promo with John Cena on Raw, Hunter came out and tells John Cena, he goes, yeah, I'm really afraid of the guy whose one move is pumping up his Reeboks. You know, and it's cute and it's witty, but it's true, for Christ's sake. I mean, he pumps up his Reeboks. That's his move. So Hunter kind of called him out on that. So John Cena, now I'm watching this whole thing, and I'm watching Hunter hammer him and tell him things that are just like, whoa, you know, it's pretty nasty. So now it's time for Cena to respond. So what does John Cena do? And here is where The build-up for the match sucks. John Cena comes out, and his one line back to Hunter that really I thought was good at first, he goes, well, I just won $50 in the guess what Triple H is going to say when he comes out here pool. And I laughed. I mean, it wasn't the best line in the world, but it was kind of funny. It was, oh, you know, he's saying that Hunter has the same promos every week, which he does, you know. I mean, we've always complained about that. Hunter's promos every week pretty much consist of, I'm the game in this industry and the king of kings in my throne and the title. And it's like, all right, dude, yeah, I got the whole thing, you know. So Cena comes out, and he says that, and it makes sense. And for a brief second, I'm like, that's pretty funny, you know, that's a good line. And then he goes, I'm not saying you say the same thing every week, you know. I'm saying that I've been hearing that my whole career. And I'm like, what? Like, where the hell did that come from? Dude, you had him. This is a guy who's been, he said that you have no wrestling moves. He actually said at one point during the promo, Hunter did, that John Cena wasn't a good wrestler. That was another line that I was like, that's terrific. Number one, no one can say wrestler but Hunter. And when he does, he's allowed to say that the world's champion or WWE champion isn't a good one. So that's even better to sell WrestleMania. You know, watch me fight the guy who doesn't know how to wrestle. You know, where do I sign up for that crap? Anyway, John Cena now has his chance to rip into Hunter. And he's good at ripping into people. This is the guy. And I always bring this up because it was my favorite John Cena moment, and he was a heel at the time. When he first started on SmackDown, and he was feuding with Brock Lesnar, who was the top monster babyface, and Cena comes out, and he tells Lesnar, you got a nice tattoo of your mother on your back. And I thought it was one of the best lines in wrestling. It's one of the few times where I sat and I laughed so hard because no one saw it coming. And really, to me, it was cool as hell because Brock Lesnar doesn't look like he can't kill you. You know what I mean? Like, Brock Lesnar is a scary-looking guy. And to have a heel come out and say that, you're like, whoa, did he say that? So here he is now. The guy who told Brock Lesnar that his mom was on his back is being confronted by Hunter and being ripped apart. And his thing was, you know, I've been told that my whole career. You've been told you have one move your whole career? Well, that sucks, dude. Get a new career. You know, like, not a good line on John Cena's part. And let me tell you guys, the day that I knew that John Cena was on his downturn, and it's you remember certain instances in wrestling. With John Cena, it's funny because you can kind of remember different instances in his career. He was on SmackDown, and he was being interviewed. And up until then, he had been doing the freestyling every week, which was really his calling card. When he came out, and he would do his raps. Everything was a rap, and it was really funny, and you kind of looked forward to it. And he came out, and he was doing an interview on SmackDown. I think he had just turned babyface. And the interviewer asked him a question. I mean, you don't really remember specifics, but I remember John Cena's part. And Cena talks about this feud that he's in, and he looks at, maybe Josh Matthews, and he goes, yeah, he's like, it bees like that sometimes. And I was like, did he just say it bees like that sometimes? It was like the most forced bullshit line they could have had this guy say. And with a gimmick like John Cena, we got to look at reality with this. There is a fine line between Eminem and Vanilla Ice. There is a fine line between a white rapper who's so cool that the fact that he's white overshadows it, which is what Cena was originally, and a dorky white rapper, which is what Cena is now. And the things that separate those two are little things like poop jokes and cheap sauce and, you know, all the things that John Cena has done and said in the last year or so that have really begun to eat away at his entire character. So, yeah, John Cena and Triple H heading in, what the hell? And then even funnier on Monday, I thought, was the fact that Cena was fighting Big Show, and here comes Triple H with a sledgehammer. And people are like, oh, I guess he's going to help the Big Show. And it's like, well, didn't Triple H just fight the Big Show? Like the last pay-per-view? Does anyone remember that but me? I guess not. All right. So, yeah, WWE continues. We're heading into WrestleMania. They continue to forget things that happened 2 weeks ago. They continue to sell the wrong things and make their champion look like a punk ass. So that's where you go with that. Flipping gears over to SmackDown, Randy Orton, Kurt Angle, Rey Mysterio, world title, whatever. I mean, so much has been said about this, and there's really nothing else to say about this. The most I can tell you guys, and I'm not going to harp on the Eddie Guerrero thing, I don't like the Eddie Guerrero thing. I think, in my personal opinion, and I'm not a friend of his, I wasn't a friend of his. Rey Mysterio obviously knows the guy. A lot of these people, you know, they were good friends of his, and I'm not going to minimize anybody's relationship with him. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to kind of question anyone's motives, but I will say this. A lot of the guys that come out there and they say, well, the storyline up until now has kept Eddie's memory alive, and his Keta fans thinking about Eddie Guerrero. And all I can say is I think that's an insult to Eddie Guerrero and his legacy, because I don't think Eddie Guerrero needs a stupid angle, stupid storyline to keep his memory alive. I think Eddie Guerrero was enough of a performer, was enough of a showman, and was enough of a wrestler in the fans' eyes that you don't need to drag his name through the mud to increase Randy Orton's heel heat and say that it's being done to keep Eddie's memory alive. Hopefully Eddie's memory would have stayed alive just based strictly on the fact that people loved him and they cared about his performances. So I don't buy that. I think that's crap. All right, but you know what? Let's take Eddie Guerrero out of the equation, which is something that I wish we could have done from the beginning with this angle and with the storyline, because the three guys going in aren't good performers. I mean, obviously you have the problem with Rey Mysterio's size, and I'm not John Laurinaitis. You know, I'm not going to sit there and be, he's too small! You know, I'm not Johnny Ace. But, and here's a, you know, this is a big exception here. Rey Mysterio is really small. Like, he's not a cruiserweight. He's tiny. And seeing him in there with Randy Orton especially, I mean, the two of them, he comes up trying to hurt Randy Orton's chest. So that is a bit awkward. Although, it does set Rey Mysterio up for some good spots. It also sets him up for good storylines down the line if he does win the title, which we'll see what happens with that. But I always thought it would be intriguing to see what it would be like if a guy of his size or somebody who goes into every match as an underdog champion, how they would kind of handle their stuff. And I think that would be cool about it, because Rey Mysterio has that mystique that if you were to be world champion and you were just a casual fan going to a house show, you could probably convince yourself that he might lose the title every time you go to that house show, just simply because he's always outmatched. So that could be pretty cool, too. Angle, I've always loved Angle. I said good things about him a few weeks ago. I'll say it again. Kurt Angle has his issues. We all have issues. I have issues. You have issues. I know you have issues. But Kurt Angle has issues. We all do. So, but as a performer, Kurt Angle, top to bottom, I think is probably the best of our generation right now. And I'll say that in all honesty. I mean, after the Attitude Generation, Kurt Angle knows his stuff. He could work as a heel, as a babyface. He does good promos. He has great matches. He knows how to convey emotion. He knows how to convey comedy. He can just do a lot of different things in the ring. And a lot of that goes back to his Olympic background and the fact that Kurt Angle is a strong competitor. You know, he went to the Olympics. He won the gold medal. So it obviously shows that he's used to competing on a different level than a lot of us are. So very happy with Kurt Angle. The guy takes his lumps, in my opinion, a lot of times unfairly. I think a lot of people just fail to understand the kind of guy that he is and the kind of world that he comes from. So that's Kurt Angle. Now, Randy Orton. Let's talk about Orton, because I got some positive things to say about Randy Orton. And guess what, guys? I don't think I said anything positive about Randy Orton in like a year and a half. So write it down. Randy Orton, every week, has been improving to a certain extent, to a point where he's finally getting comfortable with his character. Randy Orton is a natural heel, has been a natural heel from the beginning. One of the things you could read about in World Wrestling Insanity, the book, available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, wherever fine books are sold. Pre-order should be out sometime in May. There you go. We talk about this. Randy Orton is made to be a heel. He got over as a heel. In fact, the only time he ever got over was as a heel, when he went in there and started doing the RNN segments when he hurt his arm. And prior to that, he was just Randy Orton, the, you know, weirdo kid with the weird hair. And he got over as a heel big time. So now he's back. Doing what comes naturally. He's got his dad away from his side. And you know what? I grew up with Cowboy Bob. I watched Piper's Pit. I watched all 9 yards. I saw when he fought Piper. And, you know, awesome stuff, great stuff. But Bob Orton, no. I mean, I don't know how you get a heel over when his dad's walking the ringside, you know. It's, well, he's a ladies man. He's an arrogant ladies man whose daddy sits at ringside and cheers for him. It's like, that's great, dude. So now Bob Orton is gone. Mr. RKO on his own, doing his own thing. But one of the things I've noticed about Randy, too, is I think that Randy Orton has definitely improved in the ring. There was a match, and it's a little thing sometimes that you pick up. There was a match that he had 2 weeks ago, I guess it was now. It was a six-man match. It was him, it was Finlay, JBL against Benoit, Lashley, and I guess it was Rey Mysterio. And Orton, I remember in the match, was doing kind of side headlocks on the mat and chin locks and all the, you know, the rest holds that WWE likes to have their wrestlers do during the matches so that the crowd gets bored or something, I guess, whatever their reasoning is. One of the things about these chin locks and these headlocks, and you see these in a lot of matches, and Kenny Doan did it on Monday, and I thought it was bad, is it get really boring. You know, just, oh, let's put on a headlock and take a nap. And now that we've told kind of the entire world that wrestling is fake, can't really get away with chin locks and headlocks anymore because people know you're taking a break. They know it's not part of the match anymore. They know it's just a rest hold. So they tend to kind of boo you. Orton was doing these kind of headlocks on Rey Mysterio. And what he was doing was he was kind of arching his back. And he was ripping into it. And it looked... It was probably one of the first times in a long time that I've seen somebody apply a headlock where it looked like they were actually hurting the other guy. And I was really impressed with it. And I really thought it was things like that, that if Orton can start to string together and put into his matches, it'll set him apart from other people. It'll give him a chance to kind of relax when he needs to. And you don't really need to exert that much energy. In wrestling, it's all about illusion. You know, as Joe Bluth would say, you know, a trick is something a whore does. An illusion is what we do. And that's what wrestling is. It's all about illusion. It's about telling people, this move hurts, even though you know it doesn't hurt. And what Orton's doing is he's not having to throw himself off of Titantrons and off of buildings to get a reaction. He's trying to get a reaction out of a headlock. And that's pretty cool. And that's the idea of what you do when you go into a match. And heading into a match with Kurt Angle, and Rey Mysterio too, even, I think Orton's going to be in a good spot if he can kind of adapt his style a little bit more and learn to sell the little things. Doesn't always have to be selling the huge things. So, yeah, I mean, that match should be pretty good. I don't like to predict anything. So we'll see whatever happens. All I can say is, in that match, I think any one of those three guys does win the belt. I think that there's plenty of things they could do with him. I foresee maybe Ray taking it, especially given the No Way Out thing, because then he's got the thing with Orton afterwards. But who knows? WWE changes from week to week. Okay, tag team titles. Or something. I guess there's tag titles on Raw. Two guys team up. Kane, Big Show against Carlito and Chris Masters. I don't know what the hell that's about. I think it's horrible. I think it's horrible because no one cares about the tag team titles. I think it's horrible because Carlito and Masters have been teasing a split since freaking, December? Yeah, it's just a real throwaway, real mistake, real problem on WWE's part. They hate the tag team division. That's great. You know what? Big Show, Kane, Carlito, and Chris Masters could all be used in singles matches a lot better than they're being used in a tag team match. There's absolutely no reason they shouldn't put a real tag team in there against another real tag team. Maybe Eminem, you know, mix some of these guys up in there. Cade and Murdoch. Remember Cade and Murdoch? I don't remember Cade and Murdoch. Yeah, so WWE, once again, just throwing people out there, letting them do their thing. Whatever, do what you have to do. All right, also, you got Chris Benoit, JBL. Okay. Whatever. Okay, moving on from that, you also have the Money in the Bank ladder match. Let's talk about the ladder match. I think that's actually going to be a pretty cool thing, just because WWE did a good job last year of making their ladder match, their Money in the Bank match, seem like it meant something, because they had Edge use it and win it. Granted, it ended up being a throwaway in the end, but at least WWE showed that if you do win that match, chances are you're going to use it in a correct way and get what you want. And you can really use it at any time. And it adds kind of that unpredictable nature for the entire rest of the year. And people are going to be waiting, oh, when's Edge going to use it, or when whoever wins it is going to use it. But now going in, you got Flair, you got Shelton Benjamin, you got Rob Van Dam, and you got three SmackDown guys. So, I mean, it should be pretty cool. I'm interested to see how Flair is going to handle himself. I think Flair would actually be really good in the match, just because he had that match against Edge on Raw and did great in it. I mean, scary great, but great nonetheless. But when you're in there with five other guys, Flair's going to have to take less bumps than he would in a singles ladder match. So it should be cool. I think everyone's going to kind of do their own thing. I think Van Dam will be good in it, too. It'll be a good way to kind of bring him back into the fold and let people see what he's capable of. So we'll see what happens with that. While we're talking about Edge, he's got Mick Foley in a hardcore match. Again, another match where I'm just like, eh, you know, whatever. I don't think that's been sold well. I think that problem with Edge is it kind of seems like Edge is going after second place now. It's like, Edge, what are you doing, man? You were just the world champion in January. And usually, typically, when a guy is holding a title in January, by the time WrestleMania comes around, he's at least still going after that title or still doing something with that title. Edge has totally jumped out of the title picture. And now he's just playing with this retired Mick Foley who said he was never going to come back years ago, and now he's here every week. So, yeah, it's Foley, it's Edge. I mean, it's not going to be a bad match. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here saying, who the hell wants to see Edge and Foley? I mean, some people probably want to see it. I just don't know if it's WrestleMania quality. I think that there's better things they could have done with the both of them. And if they really had that in mind, I think that the giving Edge the WWE title in January kind of took away from the main point, and I think it distracted people from that match. Had Edge never been WWE champion, had he used his Money in the Bank stipulation to go after John Cena and then got, you know, screwed out of it by Foley, then maybe that might have worked a little bit more. The fact that Edge held the title and now is going after a retired guy just, to me, doesn't really seem like a great idea. I mean, I don't really know how else to put it with you guys. I think it's just, in my opinion, it makes Edge look like he's taking a step down, and, you know, in a way he is. And finally, one of the last matches I really want to get into right now and talk about important matches is Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels, which I think has been sold terribly. And the sad thing is that it's been such a big focus of the show that for it to be sold terribly says a lot about it. Problem with Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels, bottom line with Vince McMahon's feuds, is that so many of Vince McMahon's feuds are all based on the fact that Vince's character is a dick. That's it. That's the entire thing about his feud. Vince is a dick. They should just—that should be the premise of every one of his feuds. WrestleMania 22, McMahon, Michaels, Vince is a dick. I mean, that's it. That's all there is to it. And the problem is, and this is what drives me nuts, Michaels has been with the company on and off since like 1988, and the best they could really find to work with is that Vince wants Michaels to do drugs. That was the premise of the feud. You know, Vince came out and told him to take drugs, and, you know, Shawn's like, well, God doesn't want me to take drugs. I can't take drugs anymore. So that's the feud? That's what it's about? How about the fact that McMahon come out and say, you know, back in the day when I really needed you the most, you would walk out on all your title reigns. How about that? How about Vince McMahon coming out and telling the world that, you know, Shawn Michaels was behind, you know, all the problems of the company, and have McMahon come out and start providing false footage of things from the last 20 years that had nothing to do with Shawn Michaels and blame it on him. Silly things. Blame him for the first In Your House. Say it was his idea to give away a house and it screwed up the entire company. Say it was his idea to hire Todd Pettengill. Think of the silliest things they could do and have McMahon come out and put it on the Titantron. It would be funny, and it would be a good way for people to kind of go down memory lane. And when you're doing a feud like Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels, two guys who have worked together for so long, you have 20 years of footage you could play with in any way you want. And WWE doesn't do that. The entire feud now is based on, you know, I want Shawn to kiss my ass. And they came out, and Vince McMahon delivered one of the most ridiculous, it was like, just really, just awkward and peculiar kind of speech on Monday about Shawn Michaels' lips on his bare ass and how it turned him on or something and he wanted to touch him. It was weird. That's the problem. Vince McMahon is a good performer in the ring. He can come out, can turn a crowd on, can get under your skin, can say the right things as a heel to really get to you. Shawn Michaels has that sympathetic look. When he comes out there, I mean, he wears weird clothes and he was wearing a woman's top 2 weeks ago, which I never really figured out what the hell that was about. But Michaels really can relate to people when he comes out and he does that little, you know, and I wish you could see him now, but you can't because we're on the radio. And he would come out and just put his face down and just look down. He's always so sullen. Shawn Michaels either has that upturned lip or he's so sullen and so sad. And this is the kind of feud where Michaels should just be sullen and sad. And there's so much they could do with it. And instead they focus on making him kiss their ass. They have Marty Jannetty, who, you know, honest to God, Marty Jannetty has been hired and fired from that company more times than, you know, some people have just regular jobs throughout life. I don't know how he works it kind of out like that, but they brought Jannetty in for the one-shot deal. They tried to make him kiss Vince's ass. It was all just based on just a weird, kind of nonsensical premise. And when you're dealing with a feud like Michaels McMahon, there was a lot more they could have done with it, a lot more places they could have went with it. It's just a case of WWE not really going outside the box anymore. And when they do, it's always into some weird area that they go into. Most of the things they've done lately have really been cookie cutter, not a lot of surprises anymore. And when they do surprise you, it's never a good surprise. It's usually like, surprise, here's, you know, we're going to throw poop at this diva. And it's like, it's a surprise. But yeah, I mean, that's the way it goes. So Michaels McMahon not really being sold well either. So I think from top to bottom, WrestleMania, not the best card in the world, but for what it is, it's not being sold. And that's the problem, because as you guys know, and as I know, and as we all know, if WWE gave us something worth buying, we'd all be willing to pay for it. And that's kind of how it works. They'll probably still do good numbers, because it's WrestleMania, but yeah, not Splendid. Yeah. To me, the whole thing seems like insanity. Wait, what? Did I say insanity? Yes, I did. Guys, it's the moment of insanity. We haven't done it in a little while, so it is back. You voted for it. For those of you listening who don't know what the moment of insanity is, you go to the insanity message boards on worldwrestlinginsanity.com. You vote away for the craziest moment of the week, and what we do, we come on here. We read the winner, and we read some of your rants and kind of go into it. You stop by the Insanity message boards. You can vote for it. You can email insanity@worldwrestlinginsanity.com to cast your vote. But enough of what it is. Let's hear what this week's winner is. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it's this week's Moment of Insanity.
All right, JR. Time for your colon surgery, and everyone on that, I'm Dr. Heine. I want you to meet Nurse Walker Knockers.
What? What? Fear is only a four-letter word.
The world's largest love machine, Viscera.
Woo! As voted by you, the readers of WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, it's this week's Moment of Insanity.
Hey, what happens?
Stephanie McMahon!
You're having my baby. What a lovely way of saying how much you love me. Having my baby. What a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me. I can see it, the face is glowing. I can see it in your eyes, I'm happy and knowing.
Yeah, there you have it, guys. This week's Moment of Insanity, no matter how you want to phrase it, is Stephanie McMahon glowing with child, poisoning the water of Shawn Michaels. And, I mean, really, that's just the tip of the iceberg. So much to this skit, folks, if you missed it. Stephanie McMahon made an appearance on Monday Night Raw, and Stephanie McMahon looking a little bigger than the last time you saw her. Did she get implants below her chest? No, 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 no. Stephanie McMahon is currently carrying Triple H's seed around in her tummy, ready to pop it out in a few months and give it a name. So she shows up on Monday Night Raw and gets involved in the Shawn Michaels, Vince McMahon, Vince is a dick feud. And comes out and tells Shawn that she wants to apologize for her family. And Michaels, of course, does what he does every week on Raw, according to the cameras that we pick up, before he comes out for his time in the ring, which is pace back and forth in his dressing room. That's Shawn Michaels' favorite thing to do. 90% of the time you see Shawn Michaels and he's not in the ring. He's either walking backstage or he's pacing backstage. So Michaels, maybe a jittery guy, maybe thinking about what women's shirts he wants to wear next. Anyway, Shawn Michaels pacing around backstage and he has a bottle of water. Stephanie McMahon comes out and girl's looking big because she is pregnant. Comes out and tells Shawn that she wants to apologize for her family. Her family is all sorts of screwed up. Shane, Vince, they're all freaking nuts, Shawn. But Stephanie's here to be the voice of reason in the McMahon family, which is just so damn scary when you really think about it through and through. So she wants to apologize to Shawn. She wants to kind of make things right with him. Doesn't really want to, you know, don't be hating Shawn. So she comes out and starts talking to him. Now, at this point, Stephanie McMahon decides to tempt karma, God, and Mother Nature by holding her tummy and pretending to be having baby pains in her stomach. Yeah, so, now, I don't know. I mean, I'm big on karma. I'm one of those weird kind of people. I don't really like to talk about things that are too far in the future because I just don't think that's right. I think that there's certain things that you should kind of just watch your ass about. And I don't know if necessarily faking stomach pain is a good idea when you're pregnant, but that's Stephanie's thing, especially when you're doing it for on-TV wrestling. You know, if she wasn't really pregnant, that'd be one thing. But I don't know. I mean, that's her thing. Whatever. I'm not down with that, but that's her shit. Now, here's the silly part, okay? Her tummy hurts, so she asks Shawn if he can go get her a bottle of water. Now, once Michaels leaves, Stephanie then turns to the bottle of water behind her and puts powder in it to mess up Shawn Michaels. Now, keep in mind, Shawn left the room to get her a bottle of water, but he left his water in the room for her to poison when she could have just... I say poison, maybe she shouldn't have poisoned him, but, I mean, she could have just turned around and just drank the water in the room. I don't know. I guess he wanted to leave because Shawn Michaels still hasn't fully figured out how the whole, you know, good guy, bad guy thing works yet, and that bad guys do bad things. So Michaels leaves the room, you know, going to go do his thing, gets her water. Comes back, suddenly Steph has this big epiphany, she's cool, she's fine, she leaves. Okay, let's look at all the crazy shit from this little promo. All right, first, you have the fact that, you know, Stephanie faked belly pain, which is her thing, not mine. I wouldn't do that. Then again, I wouldn't be pregnant because I'm a man, and if you don't understand how that works, then, I don't know, you're on the internet, look it up, you'll figure out how that whole thing goes down. Anyway, Stephanie McMahon comes out, and she's got a pregnant tummy. This is the issue, folks. Stephanie McMahon's character is not married. Stephanie McMahon's on-air character is actually single, divorced from Triple H a few years ago for what? Faking a pregnancy. That's right. She came out. She hired a fake doctor. It was actually one of the last really good, I think, angles that WWE did was that whole Stephanie McMahon pretends to be pregnant. The doctor was a bullshit artist. Linda exposed her. It was really cool. Anyway, so Stephanie's character isn't married. So when she came out and she said, Sean, I'm with child, no one was like, you know, well who knocked you up, Steph? You know, who injected you with baby batter? No one asked that. It wasn't even brought up. It was just, shit happens. Stephanie's with child, you know, changes things or whatever. No one brought it up. Okay, so as of now, I asked my Raw report, because this is where the space-time continuum gets all sorts of screwed up, all right? So Stephanie is pregnant as a character and as a real person. Now, we're to assume then, I guess, that Stephanie's character and real person are kind of melted together, meaning that if her character can be pregnant without explanation, we're to assume that her real life is her character. Do you get what I'm saying? If it's not really, if she doesn't come out and Shawn Michaels goes, you know, holy shit, why are you so big? You know what I mean? It was just accepted. Oh, hey, Steph, pregnant, huh? Great. No one asked who the dad was. Okay, so the casual fan doesn't know who the dad is. They know it has nothing to do with anything on air because it's never been brought up. So WWE is assuming, okay, well, people know Stephanie has a real life, her character's the same thing. Well, if that's the case, then Triple H must be the dad, because in real life, he's the dad-to-be, or we hope he's the dad-to-be, and then on the show, he's a character, and Stephanie's a character, and her character's pregnant, and no one tells who the daddy is, so is Hunter the daddy, but he's not. You following me? No, you're not following me, because it makes no goddamn sense. Triple H comes out here, and he will not be the husband of Stephanie McMahon on air. And he won't be. And why won't Triple H be the husband of Stephanie McMahon on air? Whatever reason you hear and whatever reason they spin, the bottom line, the reason why, is that Triple H does not want the casual fan to think that he's on top of the company because he's married to Steph. Why? Well, because if you don't know that Triple H is married to Stephanie McMahon, and if you don't know that Triple H is in the family, okay, and you just watch Raw every week, the second you find out that Triple H really is married into the family, everything makes sense. You're watching the show, and I swear, and it sounds crazy, but I've known people who didn't really know too many of the specifics, and as soon as you say to them, well, Triple H is married to Stephanie, it's like a light comes over their face, and they, that's why he eats everybody. So it doesn't really come out. So, for those of you keeping score, Stephanie, real life, pregnant. Pregnant by Triple H. Character, pregnant. Pregnant by no one knows. Triple H, real life, married to Stephanie. Fake life, not married to Stephanie. Stephanie's character, no daddy. Real life, Stephanie has a daddy. Daddy on the show, daddy not acknowledged as daddy on the show, but at home. However, WWE.com acknowledges it. I don't know what to tell you guys, so there's that. That's not even the craziest part of the whole thing. The craziest part is that everybody saw her poison the water. Everybody, the cameraman, Joey freaking Styles saw it. Everybody saw it happen. Now, I'm not one of these people who goes crazy and says to you, well, how did a camera get into the locker room? Well, because it's fake. That's how a camera got into the locker room. All these people who always flip out about the cameras and, how did the camera get there? Well, it's because it's bullshit. It's a TV show. I get that. And that, it's not my favorite part of wrestling. I don't love it, but it's a fact, okay? that's fine. This isn't one of those cases. You know why this isn't one of those cases? Because usually, when the camera's there and something happens, like, for example, Mickey James and Trish's weirdo boyfriend, when Mickey James claimed that he tried to rape her, but in reality she attacked him, that was shown on camera, but we played it off like no one saw it. The announcers didn't talk about it. No one really talked about it. With this skit, all right, and the next time you saw, this is so funny, man. The next time you saw Shawn Michaels, Joey Styles goes, Shawn Michaels is next. He's like, did he drink all that water? And it's like, hey, Joey, why the hell didn't you tell Shawn Michaels that she poisoned his water? What if she really did poison it? What if it wasn't drugs? What if she poisoned his water and Shawn Michaels died, Joey Styles? Then how would you feel, Joey, huh? How would you feel, Joey, huh? All right. So anyway, to me, just ridiculous. There's so much to that one skit that just blew my mind. The fact that we didn't explain who knocked up Stephanie. The fact that we didn't explain why the announcers knew that she poisoned his water, but no one did anything about it. Just, I don't know, why he went and got more water when there was water in the room. Just on top of it all. And I think the funniest part is that, despite all this, still, the craziest thing Shawn Michaels has been involved in this month is the fact that he wore a woman's shirt 2 weeks ago on Raw. But getting back to the subject at hand, you guys voted for this as your moment of insanity, and you kind of kicked it from all different angles. I've said to you guys before that you can email in your votes. So let me read you one of those email votes. I don't usually do that. Antoine Quintal Leonard, okay, Canadian, Montreal. Antoine, I can't really pronounce it. I hope I pronounced it right. I checked in and said, well, this week the moment of insanity seems obvious to me. It's a Steph poisoning HBK in front of the cameraman who says nothing. Seriously, that man should be tried for being an accomplice. It's criminal to do nothing and to not offer assistance. Exactly. And then, oh, by the way, following that, guys, because that skit was so crazy that we didn't go into that. After that, Shawn Michaels came out to fight Shane. He was all drugged up and blah, blah, blah. And for some reason, when Shawn Michaels was apparently a pill popper in the late 90s, he could wrestle great. But the fact that they drugged him now, he couldn't even move. So Shane pinned him. Then Vince pinned him. I don't know. I think they brought out Urkel to pin him. I mean, everybody pinned him by the end of the day. He said, these film segments are insane. Antoine goes on. They make no sense. Nothing prevented HBK from coming down to the ring a bit groggy and losing and then saying that he poisoned Shawn's water. I mean, exactly. I mean, there's just so much to the entire situation where you could just look at it and just shake your head over and over again, you know, just like Zaz calling me, shaking my head. You just sit there and you shake your head and you go, what the hell? Doesn't make any sense to me. Wolfchild over on the message board says, I'm kind of going out on a limb, but I'm saying having a pregnant Stephon Raw without explaining to the general fan how she got pregnant is my moment of insanity. Of course, maybe the baby's Raw is the next general manager. That way they can clear up both storylines at once. Yes, the Raw General Manager, the brand new white Hummer for 2006. So there you go, guys. Stephanie McMahon carting around a little General Manager in her belly. No babies, Daddy. Get her on Maury. Pull everybody out and figure it out, and we can see who the father is. And hopefully we'll hear this.
James, you are not the father.
Beautiful. All right, guys. You know what that means. We are done with part one. So it's now time for you guys to flip over to part two, where we're going to be joined on the phone line by the phenomenal AJ Styles. A lot to talk to him about TNA, a lot going on. So don't get lost. Go to part two and give it a listen now, and we'll be waiting for you. See you guys there.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.